1985. The flow of energy through a system acts to organize that system. Harold Marowitz. Introduction. 315 million years ago, a photon slipped free from the clutches of its parent star and raced 93 million miles across the void. Some 99.9999999% of its fellow photons kept on sailing past eternity. A rare few, after billions of miles, bounced off the craters and canyons of some savagely bleak world in the outer solar system. Still others, after a billion billion miles more, mutely scattered off disembodied nebulae, drifting through space. But our photon was headed to the most interesting place in the known universe, the Earth. After 8 minutes at light speed, the photon slammed into a leaf and instantly found itself recruited into a frenetic, impossible labyrinth of electrochemical nanomachinery, a whirring, buzzing tangle of life. 8 minutes to an outside observer, that is. Photons don't experience time. The sunlight had found itself, in other words, recruited into photosynthesis. The leaf was attached to a bizarre lepidodendron tree, the length of its trunk seemingly sheathed in reptile skin, in an otherworldly carboniferous period jungle, haunted by centipedes the size of crocodiles. The leaf absorbed the photon and many others through tiny antennae, and it used this solar power, with the help of water, to transform carbon dioxide from the air around it into the stuff of life, effectively conjuring more tree out of thin air. In this way, energy, once forged in the thermonuclear center of the sun and radiated across the vacuum, was diverted into the world of the living through the chemistry of CO2. It was stored in wood, the leaves that wreathed this wood, the wax that coated these leaves, the sugars that fueled this tree, for a time at least. Trees like this, after all, get quickly consumed by the rest of the living world, where this solar power continues its flow through the biosphere, animating those same gigantic centipedes busily munching its leaf litter, or the fungi that would disassemble its trunk after death. These life forms power themselves by burning plants like this in the controlled fires of metabolism, releasing that CO2 back to the environment, along with water and waste heat. And it's a good thing, too, without this vast metabolic exhaust of life on Earth, photosynthesis would fatally deplete CO2 in the atmosphere in a matter of years and freeze the planet to death. But just then, with an ear-splitting crack, all 160 feet of the lepidodendron fell into the black swamp below. And there it rested, buried in the mire, commended to the earth for the ages. As the tree sank deeper and deeper into the muck, and then into the crust, the tournament of life carried on far overhead as the solar power captured at the surface by photosynthesis unendingly flowed and dissipated through these ecosystems. Whole regimes of animals came and passed over the face of the earth. Sail-backed dimetrodons, rhino-like reptiles, giant marine mosasaurs that dwelled in seas atop the continents 300 feet deep, all perched high above these former swamps, now buried deep in the crust. The stories of these animal kingdoms on the surface of the earth, their rises and falls, were shaped by an ever-shifting climate over geologic history. Sometimes these shifts came subtly, over tens of millions of years, sometimes catastrophically, over the course of millennia. But this, too, was the story of CO2. This is because CO2 isn't merely the substrate of life. It's also, as one eminent group of climate scientists has called it, the principal control knob governing Earth's temperature, or, more pithily, Earth's climate driver. As a result, when CO2 was high in the geologic deep past, the planet sweltered, and crocodiles and palm trees migrated to a balmy Arctic. When CO2 fell, ice sheets swelled on the poles instead, and the seas fell by hundreds of feet. But not only does CO2 go